Song, and we're off and running. Today is Tuesday, March 4th, 2008. We have a lot of interesting stuff to discuss today. Up top, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things going on at VNN Forum. We're kind of looking for some technical help. I have maybe a person or two in mind. I don't know how they'll respond, but one technical problem we have right now is that people are unable to post in the Shanna Christian Chris Newsom thread. For some reason, I've checked the admin manager multiple times. To me, it appears exactly the same as every other forum that we have. I don't know why people can't post in it until I have another admin who is clever enough to find the reason. I've created a new thread, and this just in, called Christian/Newsom. Post in there, and I'll merge the threads. I know how to do that. And I've also got a sticky for this show, which is also atop this just in for Radio Stina, Tuesday, March 4, 2008. I'm Alex Linder. I guess I ought to say that at the top of the show as we have new people listening. Today we're going to talk about a number of different things. We're going to talk about that kid out at Boulder. Max Carson has written some satire that's got him in some trouble, got him suspended from the Daily Camera, I think is the paper out there. We're going to talk about Chronicles and the paleocons versus the white nationalist take on America's problems and what to do about them. We're also going to talk about the invasion of non-native species, and from this time not from the point of view of Missouri. And those rat bastards, for some reason, I keep signing up for their free magazine and they never send it to me anymore, sniff. But I came across, when I was doing some creating a snake thread, that is news about snakes, I came across an interesting article concerning Texas concerns. But first of all, what we want to talk about is a little more homeschooling. If you listen to Radio Istina, you know that there's one thing I like, it's homeschooling and tracing that revolution. And you know I like to go on about that at length. There have been a number of different happenings in the last 2-3 days since we last did this show. We last did this show formally on February 28th. But then we also filled in for Dietrich on February 29th, the leap year. That was on Friday, and today is Tuesday. So in that space, from Friday to Tuesday, there have been a couple of very interesting, very significant developments in homeschooling, not only in California and Nebraska, but on the East Coast as well. And we'll talk about them. I think we'll talk about them right now, in fact, just to lead off. So we got three or four things we're going to talk about today. I don't think we're going to run super long today, no more than a couple of hours most likely. I've also got about 15 tunes ginned up. I think you're gonna like them. And I try to mix in a little new stuff and also play some. I play a little 80s. I play a little new stuff. I play a little new stuff that you've heard before. The common denominator of these songs is they don't usually last all that long, with the exception of a couple like General Public's Tenderness. Maybe a Billy Idol song here and there. But we like to play those in between segments. What we have here at Radio Istina, for those of you who don't know, new listeners, Istina is the opposite of Pravda. Pravda is the Russian term for ideological truth, and you may recall the old paper in the Soviet Union was named Pravda. And you know, if it comes from commies, it's a lie. The real truth is the Istina, the factual reality, and that's what this show is here to bring you. So we don't have to tell you any kind of lies. We're not burdened by having advertisers. We're not burdened by having to apply to renew our license with the FCC. We're simply here because it's a necessary political service for white people to tell them and show them how they're being screwed by the system and what they can do about it. And that's why our first story of the day will involve homeschooling, which is a genuine revolutionary act. What it is people, usually they're conservative Christians from large families, but often enough they're hippies or they're just people who are just plain rebels and don't like sticking their kids. They don't see the need to stick their kids in jail for 10 hours a day. And they're going off on their own, and they can do in, you know, 2-3 hours a day, they can achieve better results than public schools can with 16 years of coercion. And they do it at a cost of maybe $500, $600, $800. That's what the average homeschooler spends per pupil, compared to $6,000 to $10,000 that the public schools spend. So withdrawing from the system, networking with others, exchanging news and tips through meetings and through conferences and seminars and trade shows and through newsletters is the way that the homeschooling revolution develops, and they have a very strong legal defense association that is often able to get the feds to back off or the state to back off with a phone call or a letter from a lawyer. So we'll talk about that to start. Well, first, I'm going to play one song here, just one. And give me time to find my notes here. And then we will proceed talking about homeschooling as our number one thing. So enjoy this song from the 80s. This is a guy who was a soap opera actor, but he also made some music. I think you'll remember him. His name is Rick Springfield.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed, it ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I wanna make her mine. And she's watching him with those eyes. And she's loving with that body, I just know it. And he's holding her in his arms late at night. You know I wish that I had Jesse's girl. I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Where can I find a woman like that? I'll play along with the charade. There doesn't seem to be a reason to change. You know, I feel so dirty when they start talking cute. I wanna tell her that I love her, but the point is probably moot. Cause she's watching him with those eyes. And she's loving him with that body, I just know it. And he's holding her in his arms late at night. You know, I wish that I had Jesse's girl. I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Where can I find a woman like that?
Ain't that a great song? I think it is. Kind of brings back the 80s a little. But we're not about nostalgia here at Radio Estina. We're about the future and what it holds for us. And that's partly determined by what we do. Check our sound levels here. Okay, we're looking pretty good. We're in the green. If we raise our voice, we can get into the low yellow. It's about right. Let's talk about homeschooling and what's going on here. Now, what we had, and I put this in a thread called California Courts Take a Swing at Homeschooling. What we have is a major battle shaping up out in California. And it's going to be very, very, very interesting to watch. I have discussed this at great length. The background of the battle here, and just to reprise that ever so briefly, California has passed a couple of laws signed by Governor Schwarzenegger that mandate positive portrayals of homosexuality and the rest of the forms of sexual deviance, short of pedophilia at the moment. Although I'm sure they'll be pressing to change that too and just make it another alternative lifestyle. So that means that there can be no discrimination against homos in textbook or from the mouths of teachers in California. All portrayals must be positive and at least non-discriminatory. And what that has the effect of is that you can't call a family something with a mom and dad and kids, because that's discriminatory. Now, in response to this ridiculousness, California Christians have called for an exodus from public schools, and they've set up a campaign under that name. I don't have it right in front of me, but the big shots of the conservative Christians, James Dobson, have called for removal from public schools, and they're trying to get 600,000 kids to leave. Now, there are about 48 million public school kids in the U.S., and there are about 2 million homeschoolers, and about 6 million of the public schoolers are in California. So 6 out of 48 million is more than 10%. More than 10% of all public school kids are in California, and they now have gay, queer-positive mandates for their teaching. And the Christians want to remove a tenth of those kids. That's their goal, 600,000, to get them out of the public school system and into homeschooling. So this is a tremendous battle, and that call came recently from the conservative Christians. And in response, what we have is an article from WorldNet Daily, February 29th, that is, you know, 4 or 5 days ago. California court has ruled that several children in one homeschool family must be enrolled in a public school or legally qualified private school and must attend. What this is sending ripples of shock into the nation's homeschooling advocates. What this is they are attempting to assert that you have to have a teaching certificate to be qualified to homeschool your kids. This would have the effect of banning homeschooling, because it would mean essentially that you can only homeschool if you've gone through 3-4 years of Mickey Mouse education credentials. And education majors are notably the dumbest of college students, and education majors are taught not the best way to inculcate the 3 R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but the best way to make their kids into passives, to transform their attitudes, as we saw Charlotte Isserbate citing a Jew named Bloom. And he said that the point of education is to change kids' attitudes, change the attitudes they come in with, that come from their family and their parents. That is radical, that is revolutionary, that is communist. That is a Jew attempting to undermine Aryan society. And that's what these education majors are taught. We have an example. This comes from a column by a guy called Skunky McDoof. And he's a column because of the way his hair is cut. He writes for WorldNet Daily. And he cites a memo put out. He says, consider this recent communique from the College of Education at California State University, Sacramento. So this is where they train teachers. What are these teachers being trained to do? Well, from their memo. There are 4 main goals that we have and will continue to focus on in the college, which are expressed in the acronym TEACH, T-E-A-C-H. Transformative leadership, equity and social justice, action, collaboration, human differences and diversity. Now just think about that for a minute. That's what these kids are being taught. That's what the people who teach these kids are being taught. Constitutes education. You see anything in there about learning how to read, learning how to decipher things, learning how to move about in the world and develop your talents, all the things that education has traditionally meant? No, there's nothing of that. It's all about instilling attitudes. You have to have the right attitude toward homosexuals. That's in law. You have to have the right attitude towards so-called minorities who are 93% of the world. You have to have the right attitude toward your own history. You have to have the right attitude toward your own race. You have to have the right attitude toward sex. As someone has pointed out, anything with education attached to it is bogus, like sex education, death education. Everything like that is not education. It's called education to fool people. What it really is attitude inculcation. They're adjusting your attitude. You have to have the right attitude. You have to be pro-abortion and pro-so-called birth control and believe that condoms and these other things represent a genuine force for safe sex. I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous terms out there. Safe sex, and it's hard not to take a Christian view of this. The Christian view is that anything opposed to them is secularist and materialist, and that is the person is reduced from an end, that is someone who's capable of generating his own ideas and exists on earth for his own purposes, into a simple human resource. And part of this is treating him sexually like basically an animal and saying there's nothing more to sex than physical procreation and protecting yourself from procreating and from disease, and a condom will take care of that. Well, this is wrong on every level. People are not merely animals. They have a spiritual side to them. And safe sex doesn't take that into account. But even on its own terms, safe sex is incorrect. Because condoms don't protect you from all kinds of diseases. As a woman, Madame de Stael, said in the 19th century, a condom is a cobweb against danger and a breastplate against pleasure. Certainly one of the wittiest lines ever uttered by a human female. Cobweb against danger and a breastplate against pleasure. That is absolutely correct. If you're using a condom, you're not having sex. You're fucking a baggie. And it's not going to protect you from disease, necessarily. But we won't go any farther into that now. That's just an example of how they dehumanize people and treat them as resources rather than ends. This is not teaching, because there's no respect for the student. You're not helping him to develop his capacities and his talents. You're telling him, you must think this, and you're treating him as essentially something to be bossed around. And we see these code words, and as I've said, I've set up a thread in the Enemy sub-forum where we talk about the misuse, the manipulation of language, tricking people through wordism, as some have called it. And that's what words are routinely used. More often than they're used for communication, or at least as often, they are used to deceive people. And by people, I mean you listening to this. They are used. So when you see transformative leadership, transform is a big word. It's one of the communist favorite words. It's not so common in America as it is other places. In South Africa, it is one of the most commonly used euphemisms for something. Transformation basically means taking it from whites and turning it over to black savages. In the U.S., it means that, and it also essentially means taking power away from white males and those who think like them and who recognize that they had much to say, certainly more than any current minorities do, and turning it over to communists. It all plays together. The communists follow the same methods worldwide. I was reading a little of the book someone sent me last night, which we will talk about later. It's called Red Over Black, and it's about the way the communists created and infiltrated the Aborigines and posed to speak for them and intended to use them to split off land from Australia, as they've done, and to undermine Australia proper by means of racial policy, as the Jews have done in the U.S. with so-called civil rights. So always, wherever you go around the globe where there's a white nation, you will see the Jews and the communists, which are basically the same thing. Communism comes from the Jews. It is of the Jews. The most famous rabbi of the first half of the 20th century, Stephen Wise, said, "Some call it communism. I call it Judaism." Wise is cited in McDonald and numerous other places. Stephen Wise. And communism, Judaism, whatever, they all use words to manipulate reality, to mislead the whites that they are trying to indoctrinate. And transformative is one of their code words. Transformative means they're transforming it from white settled Aryan patterns to Jew communist patterns. And, you know, then you've got equity and social justice. Well, you know, what does that mean? Social justice is another garbage code word. You can have justice or you can have social justice. The Jews and the commies prefer social justice. That means a Jew decides what's just rather than the written law and precedent, as is the case with the Anglo-Saxons, the Germanic tribes that we all listening to this spring from. We created that system from German forest by way of British Isles to America. We created that system. Action, collaboration, human. Well, what does action mean? Well, it means things like, you know, gay pride. It means things like gay straight alliance. All these things that are allowed and encouraged in public schools. All works together to take the 1 or 2% of the population, just as Aborigines are 2% of the population in Australia. Homos are about 1% of the population in America, but that's still enough to be used to create groups that can be used to splinter and destroy, demoralize the majority. And that's how Jews use homos here, just the way they use Aborigines in Australia. Collaboration, what does that mean? Well, to the extent that means anything, it means, you know, forcing people to be part of a group rather than learning at their own individual speed. It means tying the strong to the weak, which bores them and which clips their talent. And it prepares them for later life when they are forced to shoulder the burden that can't be carried by incompetent minorities and women. Not women, lesbians. Incompetent minorities, lesbian slackers. It accustoms them to not being able to receive due return for their own work and to be bored and to be subject to political meetings all the time. That's what sensitivity training is. It's communist indoctrination. You know, they would make the people in the Soviet Union would have to go to educational meetings or they couldn't get their ration cards. We're not that bad yet, but that's the direction things are headed. Human diversity, differences in diversity, well, again, that basically means they're going to teach white males that they have to be sensitive to the demands of coloreds because they have come from a different culture. Of course, there's no respect or teaching about what's innate and unique about white culture. I mean, if the thing were what it says on the face, it would be fine. You could teach about racial differences such as, hey, Aborigines have a 59 IQ. How can you possibly educate them and fit them into human society when they're basically not even retarded? They're not even that smart. They're dumber than sub-Saharan blacks. Well, they don't teach about real human differences. They teach that all races are equal, and at the same time they teach that race does not exist, and they teach that everything is cultural and all cultures are equal, except for the white male culture, which is negative. So this is what the kids who teach your kids are being taught, and it's not just in California. This stuff is nationwide. Wherever there's an education college, this is the kind of garbage that they're being taught. And again, education majors, the dumbest college students, the least ambitious, the least likely to think, the least likely. I mean, you're not likely to find an education major who even understands the purpose with which he is being indoctrinated or for which he's being indoctrinated. They're usually going to be females. They're passively going to accept this. To the extent they think about it at all, they're real happy because, hey, we are change agents. We're transforming America's youth for a better tomorrow. That's the level to which they will think. And these are the people who are going to be teaching your kid if you stick your kid in a public school. And as Charlotte Isserbate says in her book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, these people who run this system go out to the leaders in the community and try to get them all on board. And when they get parents who complain, like, hey, you're not really teaching my kid anything, you're just trying to adjust his attitude, they say, well, you're the only one who complained. No one else complains about it. They're taught to isolate and break down resistors. Resistors is their term for people who hew to the old successful ways. The ways that raised up the most brilliant generation ever found in the North American continent. which not coincidentally existed before public schooling ever came about. I'm talking about the founders in the 1700s rather than the public schoolers in the mid-1850s and onward. So, Skunky McDoof says, I've forgotten his real name. I've called him that for so long. There comes a time when an institution has been so badly damaged, the best thing to do is junk it and start over. The American schools have been in trouble for as long as I can remember. It's worth remembering that the nation has been at risk due to educational failure since 1983 saw the publication of A Nation at Risk, the imperative for educational reform. But despite repeated reforms, the public schools have gotten worse by every statistical measure. He's quite right. You may remember that big brouhaha back in the 80s over A Nation at Risk. But anyway, Skunky makes the correct point here, which is the point that I always make, which is that public schools are not failing, they're succeeding. You, if you think they're failing, are failing to understand their mission, which is what I just spent 10-15 minutes describing. Their mission is to turn out people who are passive and accept whatever the government says. They're obedient to authority, and they accept that these are the right attitudes to have, and if you don't have these attitudes, they simply dismiss you as someone who's not up on the latest. And that's a point that Clyde Wilson, or the GOAT, as I call him over at Chronicles, makes. And he's a professor, and he sees this as students. If you don't have the right, i.e. the politically correct, that is the Semitically correct, that is the idea that's in step with the Jewish agenda, then they just dismiss you. That's how they've been trained to think. They have been trained to think their thinking when they lump a respectable idea, an idea backed by logic and evidence, into the pile of racist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, homophobic. They think that they're thinking when they do that. They don't realize they're not thinking because no one's ever told them otherwise. Every single source of authority that they have, TV on down, I mean TV and then God, because their preachers are spouting the same garbage, TV, God, government, teachers are all saying the same thing. So how are they going to know any different? Only if they listen to stuff on the internet. He says about the teach agenda that we just discussed. A keen observer might also note that nowhere in the concepts expressed by these five main goals is anything even remotely related to a traditional education as the average parent understands one to be. This is particularly significant in light of an appeals court's decision to declare war on the homeschooling families of California, which we started talking about. He says, the school Nazis and these conservatives writing for World Net Daily always call the people doing this Nazis. Now, they might have a bit of a justification here, because the Nazis did, in fact, ban homeschooling in Germany in 1938, but the fact is that the goals being pursued, the specific goals being pursued by the people who want to ban homeschooling in America and the rest of the world today are communist Jewish goals, not Nazi goals. The Nazis taught people to take pride in their German heritage. The communists are teaching whites to be embarrassed and ashamed and feel guilty for their white heritage. So there's a big difference there that you will never hear discussed by the conservative Christians who oppose homeschooling. At least the ones who write professionally, because they're all afraid of the Jews. And people at WorldNet Daily and every other instance are the greatest shills for Israel and the Jews on every single issue except homeschooling. The school Nazis are not the least bit concerned with educating the children, but rather making sure that it is their values that are instilled into the state's children, not the parents. And so have transformed the public schools from purported centers for collective learning into avowed intellectual death camps. Menticide, the death of the mind. There is no point in attempting to fix such a lethally poisoned institution. Let the male teachers withdraw en masse from the system. They are not wanted anyway. Let no child be left behind as the illiterate and innumerate graduates with their meaningless degrees. Let the universities continue to devolve into remedial reading programs for unmarried women. Embrace the failures of the system with enthusiasm, because the sooner complete control is turned over to the cave-dwelling control freaks who seek to run it, the sooner schools will collapse in ruins. Knowledge will still be accessible to those who seek it. One cannot fix what is not broken, and the schools are working as they are designed to work. That is, as I say on VNNforum.com, that is the crucial insight. The schools are doing exactly what the progressives and the Jews who set them up want them to do. They may not have set them up, but they took them over, and they are being directed to their ends. They don't want your kids competing with their kids, so they give them an anti-intellectual education. What you want for your kids is a real intellectual education. Schools will just tell him, these are the semantically correct attitudes towards everything. You must share them. Your child doesn't need that. He'll be harmed by it. They're advocating ideas and behavior that are dangerous to your child. This is not a battle that can be fought and won, says Skunky. It is not a battle that should be fought. Homeschooling is but a stopgap. In the long term, it is technology that will put an end to the 100-year American experiment with Prussian pragmatism. And there he's talking about public schools were set up originally in Prussia, and that model is what we see in America today. Because in the 19th century, in the 1800s, a lot of the American students who went through the Ivy League would go over to Germany for a PhD, and they saw these new ways of doing things, and they brought them back to America, even though they were solely designed to serve the state and turn out functioning robots, you know, who would serve the Prussian military. And that's the model here. But the specific ends to which the Prussian model is adapted in America, as we call it, are Jewish ends. Everything that is taught in a public school serves the Jewish agenda and is anti-white. That's the crucial insight here. Don't be misled by the conservative Christians writing for WorldNet Daily and others who denounce Nazis. There's not a Nazi agenda being pursued in the public schools. It's a communist Jewish agenda. White is bad. You know, multiculturalism is good. Nigger is good. Mexican is good. Sex deviant is good, but white is bad. That's what's being taught in the public schools. That's not what the Nazis taught. Now let's look a little more at the article. Judge orders about what went on in California. So what happens is this second appellate court in Los Angeles is basically forcibly taking these kids from their family. I guess they homeschool a number of them, the Longs. Long family, and they're going to jam them and force them to jam them in school. Of course, they're going to appeal. And they, the nice thing here is the Christian homeschoolers set up a legal defense association. It runs out of Virginia. It was started by a guy named Ferris, and now it's run by a guy named Smith. Both of them first named Mike. And they've been around for 25 years. And in 1983, only five states allowed homeschooling. Well, they went to work, and now it's legal in every state in the union. But abroad, it's often not legal. Like in Germany, it's illegal. And the state is known for busting people, and German families have fled to islands of the UK or other places to avoid having their kids forcibly taken and jammed in public schools. And the Germans say very directly, because they're more under the thrall of the Jews than anywhere else as a result of World War II, they say very directly, you know, Your kid has to have the right attitudes, and if you're teaching him at home, you might teach him the wrong things. He must go to school, and he must be taught what everybody else is thinking, and he must believe the same things. They say it very directly there. And that's the situation that the NEA, the Professional Teachers Union in the U.S., and the Jews who rule the U.S. would like to see here. Now, why don't they have it if they're in control? Well, basically, there weren't that many kids who were ever homeschooled or who really wanted to, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But what has happened is the movement has grown so large that now the NEA is starting to get worried. Like I said at the start of the show, there are about 2 million kids who are homeschooled. That's by the HLSDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. HSLDA, that is. And the NEA admits there are over a million, so you have 1 to 2 million, and supposedly it's growing, you know, 5 to 15% a year. So, this starts to eat into the NEA's power base. The NEA is a tremendous power base because you have public schools everywhere in the country. And these are essentially democratic outposts. They're natural organizers for the Democratic Party. And they get money for every kid's ass that's in a school seat each day. So even though it saves the state money when they don't have to, you know, cough up another $7,000 to educate these people, it starts threatening the power of the NEA. And their response is to try to push through regulations that force homeschoolers, say some mother who wants to teach her kids, they want her to be as certified as a public school teacher to be able to do it. Now, that's obviously not possible. You know, you can't just take 3-4 years out of your life and go get a bachelor's degree in education to teach your own kids. You should have the legal freedom to do it, but you didn't before 83. The Christian lawyers, the Christian advocacy group who sued over these things got it, made it possible to get laws passed to allow this homeschooling. And now it's really taking off because, like every government institution, when the people have a choice to take something else, they take it. And the government has shown up for what it is, just like the public mail. The government can't compete in overnight mail. It has like no percent of the market because it doesn't do as good a job as UPS and FedEx do. So it is with public schools. We don't need them. The solution to them is just to get rid of them entirely. You can't even own a home these days because property tax is so large. In a lot of places, you're going to pay $12,000 to $14,000 a year. And what do you pay for? You pay for people who are teaching the teachers teach transformation. No reading, writing, arithmetic. It's all about attitudes and adjusting them and being gay positive. And you're paying $14,000 a year for that on top of your mortgage. If that isn't tyranny, I don't know what the heck you would call it. In fact, Jefferson defined tyranny that way. You know, he said, anytime you're taking money from a man at gunpoint and forcing him to subsidize views he disagrees with, that's tyranny. Well, that's exactly what property tax is. Because I know you listening darn sure don't believe in the goals as outlined by the TEACH program at Cal State Sacramento. You don't believe in that garbage. You don't want that garbage foisted on your kids. Yet you have property tax money taken from you every year to pay, force you to pay for that. And I guarantee you, it's not just Sacramento. It's not one whit different in your school district. They're taught to transform your kids into little multicultural, Jew-friendly robots. So, the battle is joined here in California. Well, let's read a couple of quotes from this article in WorldNet Daily, February 29th, by a guy named Unruh. Bob Unruh, U-N-R-U-H, means like unrest in German. Ruh is rest. He says, this is the court talking. We find no reason to strike down the legislature's evaluation of what constitutes an adequate education scheme sufficient to promote the, quote, general diffusion of knowledge and intelligence, the court said in the case. We agree. The educational program of the state of California was designed to promote the general welfare of all the people and was not designed to accommodate the personal ideas of any individual in the field of education. So what you have here is the state claiming it has the responsibility to educate the kids and that the parents better not get in the way with any ideas of their own. The state will decide what kids need to know and it will force them to learn those things. And if that includes fagitprop, that is fag agitprop, well, so be it. You have no right to opt out or object to that, California parent. Your kids will like fags whether you like them or not, whether you want your kids taught that or not. That's freedom, democracy, and the Mayor Kwan way. And here's a quote from Germany to show you this thing laid out about as baldly as you'll find it anywhere in the world. Wolfgang Drautz, Consul General for the Federal Republic of Germany, has said, school teaches not only knowledge, but also social conduct. Think about that. School teaches not only knowledge, but also social conduct, encourages dialogue among people of different beliefs and cultures, and helps students to become responsible, there's another code word, citizens. When the communists talk, they use many of the same words that normal whites do, but they use them to mean different things. They're coded meanings. Responsible means someone who holds the right attitudes. We'll see in the case of this Max Carson, student columnist at University of Colorado Boulder, that as soon as he publishes a satire that offends people, the usual chirpers start saying, of course we support the First Amendment, but it must be used responsibly. And that has been said of me here in certain things that I've done in Kirksville, like putting out our Aryan Alternative. You know, the paper editorialized it saying it's an irresponsible use of the First Amendment. Anytime someone breaches the lines of Semitical correctness, the leftist, and especially the journalism majors, are really trained in this. They start yapping about responsibility and appropriateness and all these coded words that mean you have to go along with the agenda. You don't dare thwart it. That's not responsible use of the First Amendment. But, of course, it's the very essence of the First Amendment, is that you can criticize those in power because they're often wrong, and they almost always have an incentive to lie, cheat, and steal. And 99 times out of 100, that's how they became authority. Certainly in any corrupt political system like we have in the United States, they didn't rise to the top by native talent. They rose to the top by demagoguery, by signing up with the right lobbying groups, and by being in some personal ways more attractive or more vicious than their opponents, but almost never more principled. So these are the people who dominate the state, and they're going to determine what is responsible and what is proper socialization and what is the proper attitude to hold on different points on the agenda. And yours is not to reason why. Yours is just to go over to Iraq and die, or love fags and fry here in the U.S. Specifically, the appeals court said the trial court had found that, quote, keeping the children at home deprived them of situations where, one, they could interact with people outside the family, two, there are people who could provide help if something is amiss in the children's lives, and three, they could develop emotionally in a broader world than the parents' cloistered setting. Now, the fact of the matter is they've studied this and they've found that children with very high IQs do better when they are raised around adults than around their peers. And being raised around your peers is the very definition of public school. You're stuck in with a class of people who are all the same age. You don't benefit from any up and down scale. And you're more likely to be subject to what they call peer pressure. If you're at home, you can learn from people from all over the spectrum, different ages and sexes. You're more flexible, despite what the court says. You know, you can go out to a museum and learn certain things. You can do this, you can do that, you can get online and learn stuff, you can do it more quickly. The whole point is that we live in an age in which technology makes possible mass customization. That's an oxymoron, mass customization. Usually it's mass uniform. You know, you go to your school and you go to their lunch and you get that sick smell as you walk into the cafeteria. I know a lot of you will remember that sick smell of some mediocre soybean-based hamburger product. You can smell it from miles away as you walk the drab halls with their institutional nasty white paint and their garish orange-painted doors or teal railings. You remember all that crap if you went to public school. What a misery it is. You know, there's no need for that. Kids can be raised at home. There's 100 hours of instruction required to teach people on average reading and writing and basic arithmetic. 100 hours, that's all it takes. A few weeks, a couple months. Teach your kid how to read, teach him basic math. That's all it takes, and so that's why you don't need public schools. John Taylor Gatto has figured that out. He quotes that in his research. He's one of the main writers about this stuff. But no, the student wants you there in school doing exactly what they say. He says, the appeals ruling said California law requires persons between the ages of 6 and 18 to be in the school, the public full-time day school, with exceptions being allowed for those in a private full-time day school, or those, quote, instructed by a tutor who holds a valid state teaching credential for the grade being taught. So there it is. That's where the rubber meets the road. What the NEA and what the state administrative complex wants to say to parents is you're only allowed to homeschool your kids if you are, in essence, and in fact, not just de facto, but de jure, you are a public school teacher by virtue of your holding a public school teaching certificate gained through an appropriate course of study. That is 4 years of Mickey Mouse education major to get this. Before, if you want to teach your kids, okay, go back to school and get a degree in education. That's what they're trying to say is the law. Now, for years, as many advocates of homeschooling have pointed out, the NEA and teachers and public schools, public school administrators, principals, and vice principals have tried to discourage homeschooling by lying to parents that you must have a teaching certificate to do it, when in fact, in all states, that's not the case. In no state is that the case. Usually you don't even need to register in many of the states. Some states you need to register, but you don't really need to do anything else. You just need to tell them you're homeschooling. Sometimes you have to prove your kids are, you know, that you've adopted a course of study and that they've met some kind of criteria, but most of the restrictions are pretty light, and sometimes they don't exist at all. You can just do it in your own regard, which in America is pretty unusual. It's not really a country in which there's a lot of freedom. There's a bit of a legacy, but there's certainly a lot more safety and restrictions and regulations than there is freedom in the United States, that's for sure. So this is what's new about this ruling, is that they're basically saying, yeah, you have to, they're trying to assert that you have to have an education degree to teach your kids at home. That is a revolution. A revolutionary interpretation of the law. Since obviously no one interpreted it that way before. And the reason it's risen to this point is the state feels threatened. They feel very threatened when these people who are usually pliable, who are usually ductile, dare we say, these people who are usually willing to provide fodder for the army, usually willing to go along with whatever the government says, well, all of a sudden, they're issuing revolutionary calls for exodus from public institutions, which is a complete categorical rejection of the state. Doesn't matter how mildly they put it. You know, they typically say, well, the state is teaching things we don't like. You know, we want to believe in God, and we want our kids raised up believing the Bible. They say stuff like that. It doesn't matter how mildly they put it. The state correctly perceives this is a threat to its essence. Because these people, if they don't need public schools, what else don't they need that the bankrupt state of California is providing? Well, they don't need anything else the state of California is providing, which is basically free services to Mexican invaders and nothing else. So there's a genuinely revolutionary, not aspect of homeschooling, it's the kernel of the thing. It's saying we can teach, if we can teach ourselves, we can teach ourselves, and if we can teach ourselves, why can't we govern ourselves? Why can't we run our entire lives instead of just educating ourselves? Why do we need this whole administrative superstructure that's essentially enslaving us to its Jewish communist ideals that we don't agree with, that are opposed to everything we stand for? If we can reject its schools, why can't we reject the rest of it, the whole damn thing? That's the revolutionary bottom line here. That's why it's so interesting to us white nationalists to discuss it. You've got large families, and many, many times when they write these profiles of homeschoolers, they are Christian conservative whites. Almost always they're whites. They have 4 to 10 kids many times. It's rare to see one with less than 2 kids doing this. 4 to 10 kids, large, happy, conservative, Christian families who put the education of their children ahead of that extra vacation or that second car. The father's working while the mother teaches them a lot of times. How is that possible? I can't do it without 2 paychecks. Yes, you can. You're just choosing to put money ahead of your own children's interests. If conservative Christians can do this, whites can do this, certainly. And they should be doing this. Here's what the father, Philip Long, and he is the specific man in question. It's his family that they're trying to take the kids from. The father, Philip Long, said the family is working on ways to appeal to the state Supreme Court because he won't allow the pro-homosexual, pro-bisexual, pro-transgender agenda of the California's public schools, on which WorldNet Daily has previously reported, to indoctrinate his children. We just don't want them teaching our children, he told WorldNet Daily. They teach things that are totally contrary to what we believe. They put questions in our children's mind we don't feel they're ready for. And again, they teach a lot of this homo, this faggot prop, is taught to kids who are like 5, 6 years old. They're already teaching them about fisting. They're teaching them about, you know, kids from parents with 2 mommies, garbage like that. Of course they don't want their kids. No normal person wants their kids taught that. Sexual deviance is not something to be happy about or merry about or gay about. It's the opposite of that. It's absolutely miserable. By every statistical index, fags are horribly bad off. I mean, psychologically, they smoke more, they use more drugs, they're unhappier, they're more prone to suicide, they don't live as long. All that stuff is misery. And the Jews are trying to foist that on our white children. They're trying to encourage them in ways of destruction. Become homos, mix with blacks, all these things that statistically are known to damage and injure and hurt and kill white children, Jews encourage. The Jew is your enemy, white man. He is the greatest enemy that your white family faces. This father is taking good care of his family. He says, when they are more mature, they can deal with these issues, alternative lifestyles and such, or whether they came from primordial slop. At the present time, it's my job to teach them the correct way of thinking, he said. We're going to appeal. We have to. I don't want to put my children in a public school system that teaches ideologies I don't believe in, he said. And again, that is the very definition of tyranny, as Jefferson said. When you take someone's money and you force them to subsidize views that they disagree with, you are a tyrant and they are a slave. And that's what the institutional property tax is. Because the public schools are teaching things that the vast majority of people are opposed to. But it's only the conservative Christians who are taking the time to bother to understand what their kids are learning and correct it. And care enough about that to prevent them from being taught these lies. A spokesman for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, one of the world's premier homeschooling advocacy organizations, that's true, because it tries to help people even in Germany and abroad in Europe, where the stuff is even more tightly regulated than the U.S., they said their experts were analyzing the impact of the decision. It's a very unfortunate decision, he said. Randy Thomason of the Campaign for Children and Families, that's part of this Exodus movement, said under California law, parents have the legal right to create a private school in their home and enroll their children. Children belong to the parents, not to the state, he said. But he acknowledged there's a great deal of misinformation about the status of homeschooling in California. For years, the government school establishment has been lying to parents about the law. Just this week, a Los Angeles Unified School District employee lied to a mother who wanted to homeschool, telling her, you must have a license, you must be credentialed, and you must follow all the state curriculum. That's three lies in one sentence. Now we have judges going crazy and actively separating children from their parents. A legal outline for parents' homeschool rights in California, published by Family Protection Ministries, confirmed Thomason's description. The state's legal options for home educators include establishing a private school in their home by filing a private school affidavit with state regulators, or enrolling in private school satellite instruction programs or independent study programs, it said. The Long family had been involved with such a program in the Sunland Christian School, but the appeals court took the extraordinary step of banning the family from being involved in that organization any longer since it was, quote, willing to participate in the deprivation of the children's right to a legal education. So, the battle is on here over who determines what's best for the family, the father of the family itself, or the state. And so again, as I said, what this is we've laid the context for the revolution. You know, 48 million public schoolers, 2 million homeschoolers, growing 10% a year, California being the largest state in the union in terms of population, and having passed these laws, Senate Bill 777 and Assembly Bill 394 that force positive portrayals of homosexuals, this leading to a call for exodus from the public schools, and now the court swinging back and saying you can't homeschool unless you have an education credential. So this battle will go on, and we'll hear more about it. Now there's another exciting thing on the homeschooling front, not directly homeschooling, but related to it. I'm going to talk about that when we get back. We've been going for about 45 minutes to an hour. I think it's time to hear a couple more songs. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about a brand new film production company formed by graduated homeschoolers. Very, very exciting stuff. So, right now, let's enjoy a little. What do we want to hear? We're going to play the song I interrupted the other day. I want you to enjoy this. It's Make Me Lonely Again by Amy Spies, who a friend of mine provides me with some new music that she finds touring around the web, and I think this is some of the best I've heard of that. And then we're going to hear Make Me Lonely Again by Amy Spies. We're going to hear Rama Lama Bang Bang by Roisin Murphy. We're going to hear another one by Miss Marianne, and then we're going to hear a fourth one by Jim Bryson. And after that, we'll come back and we'll talk about this brand new Outside Hollywood movie production company. Very exciting, revolutionary stuff that should get you fired up. So enjoy this. Pay attention, listen, and I think you'll like this.
I sit by my window and stare at the moon. I've held all your letters till my fingers were blue. I recall every moment like I'm pressing rewind. I got what I asked for. Now I'm losing my mind. Even when I was younger, I liked being alone. Felt awkward at parties, didn't go to the prom. While the whole world was dancing, falling in love, I stayed home in my slippers, watching Harold and Maude. I feel like I'm dying, and I'm always crying. If this is what love is, make me lonely again. Understand why. When girlfriends had crushes, how they'd giggle and sigh. Love made them seem stupid, giddy and lost. And I bragged love would never tie my stomach and knots. I feel like took a dive. I loved you the first instant you looked into my eyes. Now my whole world is spinning. I'm not sleeping so well. really the answer? Why does it put us through hell? I feel like I'm dying. I'm always crying. This is what love is. Make me lonely again. Cause I feel like taking a picture of you, taking a picture of, taking a picture of me, taking a picture.
Ramma, ramma, bang, bang, flash, bang, big, bang, bing, bong, bing, bong, 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 bong. With a hammer, bang, bang, flash, bang, 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 bong, 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 bong.
I got the world by the throat. and I'm happy every hour.
Thank you.
All right, we're back, and that was that last one. There was "All the Fallen Leaves" by Jim Bryson, fourth of four. Kicking that off, we heard "Make Me Lonely Again" by Amy Spies. Then we heard "Ramalama Bang Bang" by Roisin Murphy. "I'm Happy Day, Happy Every Day I Live" by Miss Marianne and the Something Wranglers. And finally, as I said, "All the Fallen Leaves" by Jim Bryson. That's a new one. I don't think we've included that before. Fairly tasty, I suppose. Now, as I said before, there's more exciting news on the homeschooling revolutionary front. We've gotten through discussing the context and the latest swing that the California courts have taken against homeschoolers. And we will continue to track that very closely here at Radio Astina, because it's a revolutionary flashpoint, I guess is the simplest way to put it. Now, there's another story in the news, and this is what we're going to talk about before we get to the story about the new movie production company. I want to do just a little more of a follow-up on what I discussed in Radio Astina. I think it was February 26th. We talked about homeschooling revolutionaries in Nebraska and what they were doing there, and we talked about an article featuring the Conrad family. They have five kids being homeschooled, and there's a network of about 6,000 homeschoolers in the sparsely populated state of Nebraska. We further talked about an enemy of public schooling in Nebraska, and the enemy of public schooling in Nebraska is a woman named Diana Shemek, who is either a Jew or married to a Jew or both. She has a son named Saul. And her husband, Herb Shemek, is a lobbyist with the NEA, the State Teachers Union. And she has introduced a bill that would essentially require what the judge is claiming is required in California, that is education, formal education credentials in order to teach your kids in a home school. But she got her ass kicked by a bunch of homeschoolers, is the upshot and the good news here. And what happened was 1,300 homeschoolers showed up at a hearing in Nebraska. You want to talk about political power, where State Senator Diana Shemek introduced her oppressive testing bill, as the HSLDA is calling it, 1141. So LB 1141 in Nebraska, again, this is. So we've gone from California to Nebraska. We have an avowed opponent of homeschooling introducing a bill, and basically it gets swatted down. And even if it had gone through, the governor had said he wouldn't pass it. So because of the massive political pressure, the homeschoolers are able to leverage 1,300 of them showing up at the Capitol in Lincoln. They are able to prevent this bill from being passed. Not that it had much support anyway. In fact, it was a total trouncing from what I can tell. According to a summary of this event from the HSLDA. Why do I always say that wrong? Every single damn time. It's the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association I've mentioned before. These are the guys who keep a state by state watch. They're very effective. They track in the legislature any kind of anti-homeschooling bills. Right now they have their experts studying the appellate court in Los Angeles' decision to steal children from the Long family and forcibly induct them into public schools. That's being studied by the homeschoolers of the HSLDA. The HSLDA also wrote this summary of the hearing in Nebraska. I'm going to read just a little bit of that before we get on to the part two here of our story about the homeschooling revolution and the ways in which that ramifies, which go far beyond homeschooling. What they say is, again, Diana Shemek, she's the main opponent in Kansas. When Senator, and I'm reading from the HSLDA briefing on this, when Senator Diana Shemek introduced her oppressive testing bill, that is 1141, LB 1141, that's how they title it, I guess LB in Nebraska, at the February 26th public hearing, before the Nebraska Education Committee, she confessed that a majority of homeschoolers do a great job. So they already got her on the defensive. That's how political pressure works, you know, and there's 1,300 people there. You don't really want to offend them that much. Furthermore, she claimed that only anecdotal evidence of irresponsible homeschoolers exists. That is, as a typical leftist Jew commie, she has no case. She has to resort to lying. Her best anecdote was from a quote-unquote meter reader, she knows, who allegedly claimed that when reading meters during the day, he often sees children whom he believes are homeschooled. The assumption is that these kids are not receiving an adequate education. So there's the communist case reduced to a nutshell. Stripped bare. What do you have? You have some Jew or kike-alike claiming that a meter reader has run across truant kids. For that reason, we should ban homeschooling in Nebraska and preserve the monopoly status of the education majors called teachers. And what do these education majors know that entitles them or makes them qualified to teach your kids? Well, we heard about that too. TEACH, transforming, collaboration, human differences, attitude adjustment. That's what they know. Think about this. The state wants to have a monopoly on lies in order to mess up the people so that they can never undercut it and take power and money back from it. They're a giant leech, the NEA. Senator Shemek admitted knowing that her bill would be controversial, but said that she wanted to start a discussion about testing homeschooled students. She pointed to Iowa as a model for her legislation and used material from HSLDA's website to show that Iowa is one of several Midwestern states that moderately regulate homeschoolers. She failed to mention that from Michigan to Idaho, Nebraska is also surrounded by a majority of states that have very few homeschooling regulations. During her testimony, Senator Shemek read several emails from people, including a homeschooler, who support her bill. She also implied that legislators who passed the current homeschool law in the 1980s did not realize that it would be used by homeschoolers. However, a former legislator and chairman of the Education Committee who accompanied Senator Shemek did not concur. Furthermore, many homeschoolers who attended yesterday's hearing at the Capitol stated that they had testified at hearings back in the early 80s, and that it was clear to everyone that the crowds lobbying for the law were primarily homeschoolers. As she closed her testimony, Senator Shemek acknowledged that she introduced the bill because, quote, we don't know what is going on, unquote, and to, quote, catch kids who fall through the cracks, unquote, says HSLDA. LB 1141 certainly has made people stand up and take notice. It has attracted the attention of the entire Nebraska homeschooling community and homeschoolers across the nation. Hundreds of families attended yesterday's hearing. Hundreds of families. Overwhelming the Nebraska Capitol and amazing legislative staff with their good behavior and decorum. Ironically, the only reported issues of unruly children came from those participating in a public school scavenger hunt. You can imagine that there are any niggers in Nebraska. There's plenty of Mexicans. The niggers would be in Lincoln, where the capital is, the big city, university. Homeschoolers filled the Warner Capitol Chamber and five overflow rooms, listening intently to the 2 hours of testimony, which was mostly against LB 1141. Capitol staff informed Kathleen Lenzen, wife of Nebraska Christian Home Educators, NCHEA President Nick Lenzen, that the crowd set a record for attendance at a hearing. They got more people there than have ever been found at a Nebraska legislative hearing. Am I not wrong in remembering from my own education that Nebraska is the one state with a unicameral legislature? That is, it doesn't have a Senate and a House. Well, maybe it does now, or maybe it just has a Senate. I don't know. I shouldn't be this ignorant, but in any case, this was a record crowd. This is real political power when you can get hundreds of families, 1,300 people to show up at a committee hearing that isn't even going to get anything done. It's just trying to get a law thrown out there for consideration. Think about that, all you white revolutionaries out there. Take note of what these Christians are doing. How can you join them and help them? How can we copy what they're doing in building alternative structures? Let's read a little more. I think this is very fascinating stuff, and I've got this article that I'm reading from posted a number of different places at VNNforum.com. That's our own little gathering for those who understand that America needs a revolution, because America has been, it needs a counter-revolution. It's been taken over by Jews, Jewish communists in the 1960s, and they passed all kinds of law, more or less outlawing the white race. We're grudgingly allowed to exist without being killed. That's about all you can say in terms of the rights we have left. And we are fighting back against that in the same way the homeschoolers formed to fight against laws that banned homeschooling. Well, when you have that kind of power, the professional whores and prostitutes who form our congresses and our legislatures will listen to you. You can get 1,300 people, the most ever, to show up. Other testimony on LB 1141 was given by state government officials. Jay Sears of the Nebraska State Education Association, that would be the NSEA, or that's probably the Nebraska's version of the NEA, testified in favor of the bill's principles and concepts, despite the fact that the NSEA has questioned the applicability and use of tests in public schools. Brian Halstead of the Nebraska Department of Education, NDE, again, these are all people who are paid out of funds taken in part from homeschoolers who resent what they're teaching, hence victims of the tyranny of these people, said that NDE is neutral on the bill and pointed out that the statutes and rules do not explicitly refer to homeschools, but rather to quote-unquote exempt schools. Then they go into the testimony against 1141. Opponents testified for an hour and 20 minutes as Senator Ron Raikes, Education Committee Chairman, graciously allowed an extra 20 minutes testimony. Again, that's a perk that you get when you produce 1,300 people from all over the state. And Nebraska is at least, it's about 450 miles wide if you've ever driven over I-80. And they drew hundreds of families, 1,300 people. They let them run another, you know, they're going to let them run a little extra long. They get a lot of people. They got a lot to say. This is dramatic. We care about this. They show by their behavior and their actions that they are concerned to affect a particular outcome, which is the preservation of their right to instruct their kids as they see fit, and not as some monkey married to a Jew sees fit. You understand that? You have the right to whatever you can take. If we don't fight back, all that is necessary for evil Jews to triumph is for good white men to do nothing. These Christians aren't standing by and doing nothing. They make a revolutionary withdrawal from the system, and then they see to it that the system respects their wishes, even as it double taxes them, because they have to pay not only the property tax to support their enemies teaching stuff they don't like in the public schools, they have to pay the way for their own kids in their own homeschool. Imposes a burden on them. That's how the state exists. It feeds off of the people it destroys, while denouncing them and trying to suborn their offspring. Where does it get the money to sustain itself? Why, out of the very pockets of the people it despises and uses and treats as a human. Yeah, no wonder they call it human resource. That's exactly what humans are to the Nebraska Department of Education. They're a resource. They provide endless tax money. With that tax money, they can do exactly what they want and no holds on it. All these homeschoolers are asking to do is to be allowed to continue to fund that, but also to fund their own education that's real intellectual education at the same time. A real revolution would be getting rid of these so-called public schools that are really slave indoctrination camps entirely. Let's not lose sight of the bigger picture here in celebrating this modest victory. So, the opponents of LB 1141 testified for an hour and 20 minutes. Dave Lostro, former legislative liaison, homeschooling father, and veteran of the early 80s Nebraska homeschooling controversies, began the opposing testimony. He explained that the current bill would violate the religious convictions of homeschoolers operating under Rule 13. So he says the bill would violate the religious convictions of homeschoolers operating under Rule 13. He also questioned the Department of Education's ability to administer the new law in light of its history of scandal and current difficulty managing Nebraska's public schools. Now, I don't know what that means. I'm presuming that that relates to... The only thing I've seen from Nebraska, I think it was difficulty with these influxing Mexicans and bilingual education and mixing these people together who would rather be separate. And probably the inability of the NEA to educate niggers in the two big cities in Nebraska. That's what I'm guessing. I don't know. Lostro told the committee that Rule 13 homeschoolers believe that they are responsible to God for the education of their children, and that the state does not have the authority to control them in the way that LB 1141 would. So they recognize an authority over the state. They recognize the limitations to state power. Whereas even many white nationalists believe that the state is God and whatever it can choose to do whatever it wants. And they believe that the people who form the government are angels compared to men and evil private men after profits. It's absolutely asinine to anyone who has ever dealt with government. The government does not do one thing well, does it? If it does do one thing well, what is that thing? Administer Social Security? Guard the borders? Prosecute wars in Iraq? Integrate the races? Deliver the mail? Guarantee non-threatening vaccines? No, it doesn't do anything well. So the most important task shouldn't be left to it. The only reason you need a state to exist is to keep the white race defended against external threats. And yes, the state should explicitly be a vehicle for the preservation of the white nation and nothing else. We are not a nation of ideas. We are not an experiment. We are not a creedal nation. All those are Jewish lies. We are not a nation of immigrants, except white immigrants from white areas, as allowed in by the whites who ran the country, who set it up, founded it, and created the Constitution to protect the interests of their posterity. That is, the people who come from their loins and the grandchildren, and so on and so on. That's what America is. It's a blood and soil nation like any other. The Jews have simply taken power and lied about our origins. And they propagate their lies through the mass media, through the politicians, through the bought preachers. But they also propagate it through the public schools. And they determine what goes in the textbooks. And that all the groups they use to destroy us shall be prospered and shall be non-discriminated against and portrayed positively in those textbooks. Homeschooling is a way to fight back against that. So Lostro's point was underscored by testimony from Michael Donnelly, staff attorney for HSLDA. So see, these people have their legal organization that's out there fighting for them, who said that Nebraska's current law properly balances the interests of the state and the rights of the parents. Donnelly further explained that LB 1141 would make Nebraska's homeschool regulations the most restrictive in the country. That's what this NEA cunt is trying to do. And in the Conrad article we discussed earlier in February, she said that, yeah, my husband works for the NEA, yeah, he's a lobbyist for them, but that has nothing to do with why I introduced this bill. So we know that Diana is a liar. And lying is what leftists and Jews must do, because their agenda runs 180 degrees contrary to the interests of the people in whose name they claim to speak. They can't deal with anything honestly or fairly or factually or evidentially. They must lie. They must smear. They must work between days. For you who are a tad slow, that means at night when nobody's looking. If they were honest, they could make their case openly and directly, but they dare not do that because in a democracy where the will of the majority prevails, they don't have the votes. So Donnelly pointed out that the U.S. Supreme Court has held that children are not the mere creatures of the state. Now, we saw an assertion of the contrary from the California Second Appellate Court in Los Angeles, which is essentially, this is the battle. Are children ends in themselves, subject to the authority of the parents who, after all, love them the most and have their interests closest to heart, or are they mere human resources to be used by the state as the state sees fit? That's the question here. That's the crux of the matter, spiritually and legally. And so, the Homeschoolers Legal Defense Association has a lawyer who points out the Supreme Court has held that children are not the mere creatures of the state, and that while the state does indeed have an interest in education, it does not have a compelling interest to dictate the method of education. Again, the greatest genius generation ever produced on the North American continent was produced in a time when there was not a single public school on the continent. Let me repeat that. Ben Franklin, Jefferson, Adams, Monroe, Washington, all the rest of them. There wasn't a single public school around. So where did all these geniuses come from? How were they taught? How were they educated? They must have learned somehow. Well, what has learning got to do with public schools? Not a damn thing. Learning is prevented in public schools. The aforementioned men were taught by private tutors. Learning is out there in great scoops for anyone who wants it. My God, in the internet, no one has an excuse for being uneducated about anything. I can look up something and in 3 minutes, I know 80% of what an expert knows. Right? I mean, that's true for anybody. There's never been a time when it's been easier to educate yourself about any topic you wish to learn about. There's never been a time, not coincidentally, when public schools were less needed. They're onerous, moribund, ancient, unnecessary institutions. There are better ways to teach someone and educate them if that were the real end of the public schools. And that's what we're saying here is they're not. That's not the end. The end of them is instilling the correct, politically correct, Semitically correct attitudes. And even before that term came into vogue, you had the progressives who reformed American education, progressives like John Dewey, saying directly that the child's intellectual education isn't that important. People need to get over their fetish with learning to read. I mean, there are people making statements that bald, that anti-intellectual. It's not so important that kids learn to read. The important thing is they learn to work in groups and get along with people and have the right attitude about things, i.e. have the communist New World Order socialization drummed into them. That's the real purpose of what passes as education these days. And it has been for a long time. So what you have is the confluence of WASP New World Order crazies like Dewey and malevolent Jews like those who created Columbia Teachers College and spread these doctrines we were talking about earlier in the show, coming together to create an environment that is extremely anti-white, and obviously anti-Christian too, as you get from the homeschoolers, because they want a one-world government, and all of what they call education is directed toward that end, a one-world government in which your kid is basically a coffee-colored slave. That's why they encourage anti-intellectualism passing as education. That's why they encourage miscegenation. That's why they encourage fadget prop in the schools and sex education, whatever. They want to get your kid loose, promiscuous, not caring who he mixes with, and not thinking about anything. Fit only to be a slave in the global plantation of the New World Order, a Jewish production. That's the biggest context here. Once you understand that, you understand the white cause and what we are fighting back against and why we look at these people who have opted out of this system and why we admire them, even if their ends are not entirely our own. They show us the way in this case. Federal administrative law judge James Gillette testifies. James Gillette, he compared LB 1141 to a bill requiring investigation of all legislators' personal bank accounts and financial records simply because a few legislators had or might have embezzled state funds. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, he argued, saying that passing a law based on limited and sketchy anecdotal evidence is bad public policy. So basically, Schemick didn't have any evidence at all that homeschoolers were doing a bad job educating their kids. Because, as we all know, the evidence runs the other way, that they're doing a great job. Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute reviewed widely known research that homeschoolers perform above their public and private school peers on objective measures of academic and social performance. Dr. Ray went on to assert that LB 1141 operates from a quote-unquote flawed premise because it assumes that the state has prior authority over children. That is, who do the children belong to, the parents or the state? The state wants to claim they're a human resource and tap them accordingly. Parents say no. Dr. Ken Dick, a research fellow at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, put testing in perspective by saying that public schools test to let parents know that the schools are doing a good job. By requiring parents who teach their children to test, the bill effectively reverses this, forcing parents to prove that they are doing a good job. He argued that because parents are responsible for their children's education, this makes no sense. Dr. Dick also responded to questions from the committee about testing, stating that testing is a mere surrogate for reality, that he prefers other evaluative measures, preferably work products such as essays or life experience. He noted that some of his faculty colleagues have noted how easy it is to identify homeschool graduates in their classes because these students listen, ask questions, and engage the class in a way that distinguishes them from their public school peers. Here's a subtler point to make here. This is that as a result of such things as The Nation at Risk, the study in the early 80s that got people all hot and bothered about the so-called failings of public schools, they got into a movement to really instill all this testing. And this satisfied many conservatives where they think that, oh yeah, that's a good way to do it. That really measures objectively their performance. But what this guy at University of Nebraska, Ken Dick, is saying is, look, what these public schools are doing now is teaching to the test. And they're encouraging everybody to be obsessed with grades and to be obsessed with passing these tests and doing better on them. And yeah, to the extent there's any real education at all, at least that's a little something. But what he's saying is that there are significant qualitative differences between these public school system kids who do nothing but fill in blanks and the truly thinking, engaged students that come out of homeschools because they're not obsessed about some test. And they're not obsessed about how do I compare against him, what's my class rank. None of that really matters. Look at what they know and what they are and have become through the homeschooling. He's saying it's much better rounded and better truly educational. They have truly learned things. They're truly engaged with the material, whereas the public school students are used to taking a test every few weeks and filling in A, B, or C, or D. Well, that's not the same thing as really being educated, is it? So that's a somewhat subtler point. Dr. Carson Holloway, professor of political science at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, noted the danger of mandatory testing in this context is severe because parents will be forced to teach to the test. That's a common phrase. To ensure that their children are not forced back into public school environment. He stated, when a precious right, such as homeschooling, is at stake, parents will have little choice but to teach to the test. And he noted, because the test would be state-approved and administered, this is unacceptable. So teaching to the test, or forcing them to have kids who will pass this test, is basically a veiled way of forcing them to adopt the state curriculum, which is another way to skin the cat of forcing them to teach exactly and only what the state wants them to know. And the whole point of homeschooling is that parents know what's best for their kids, and they have the right, secured in law, to educate their kids as they see fit, not as state regulators see fit. So the state tries to get at, this is a second way the state can try to get at homeschooling, by saying, yeah, it's legal. See how this is the way the left always operates, you know. Sure, you have free speech. You just have to use it responsibly. Oh, and don't say anything that could be construed as hate speech. And don't advertise too near the elections, because that wouldn't be legal under campaign reform. And also, don't make certain claims, because, you know, that's commercial speech. That's not free speech. How do they get at homeschooling? They say, well, you know, you want to teach your kid, you got to be regulated. You got to have an education credential. Sure, you can homeschool. Just show me your education certificate. Sure, you can homeschool. But your kid better pass this test. He better have the right attitude as expressed through, you know, A, B, C, or D properly filled out on this form. But no, go ahead and homeschool. So they try to get at the same result by any means, fair or foul. they don't want people opting out of their system, and they know that people will opt out because they know that they don't represent the majority viewpoint. They represent the majority. They represent our utopian fantasies on the part of the WASP, or simply racial, ethnic interest opposed to ours because they come from a different race. That is Jews. The Jews want to cripple us. The people of our own race who support this crap are basically evil fantasists who've signed up with these utopian nightmares, and they have some kind of defective character that prevents them from acknowledging reality and seeing how things best work and trying to forcibly enlist us in this plan for a new world order. So bad character on the part of the whites and racial interest on the part of the Jews masquerading as universal benevolence. These are the drivers behind these bad policies that we're subjected to. And we're discussing not only the philosophy and the political context here, but the specific ways they go about denying us what we need to grow large, healthy generations of whites. In their testimony, college professors and registrar staff indicated that Nebraska colleges and universities see homeschoolers consistently perform better academically than other students, which is, again, proof not only that homeschooling works, but that public schools are anti-intellectual, in essence. They produce unrounded kids. They produce kids who are not truly engaged with the material. They produce kids who, at best, are worried about passing tests and grades and comparisons with other students, but are not at all truly intellectually interested in the material, and are taught that having the right attitude is enough and that all opinions are equally relevant and equally valid, except for those that are called hate. So they're taught contradictions, and they're taught not even to recognize contradictions. And they're taught that thinking is essentially evil, hateful. We'll have an interesting view on that from Max Carson coming up. I always try to tie everything together here. I don't know if you noticed that, but that's because everything is tied together. Hitler talked in Mein Kampf about the proper use of reading, and what he says is, you know, you should read for a purpose, and you should not just read random heaps of books and kind of glibly, flippantly go through them, but you need to glean from them information that can be fitted into a growing, clarifying pattern and picture in your mind, so that everything either reinforces or does battle with something you already know. And if it does battle, then you must change. You must change one of the views to more accurately reflect the objective world. And that's why and how you read, to give you a picture of what's actually going on. And that's why this show exists, the same thing. We glean the bits of information from these stories, and we put them together to give you a picture of the world that we think is more compelling than anything you'll get from the Jew-controlled media. We know it is, because we know that they have an incentive to lie. We know how they lie, and we know why they lie. I've given them to you a couple minutes ago here in this very show. Anyway, we're getting near done here before we get on to the exciting thing, which I'm rubbing my hands in anticipation of. I might even have to play a couple more. You know what? Most of my shows tend to be the stuff I talk about before I get to the stuff I'm going to talk about. I don't know if you picked up on that, but that's how it tends to go with me. And I think that's okay. I'm pretty rebellious by nature. I don't really like doing what I'm told to do a lot of times. I like to kind of go my own way and kind of try to figure things out. And I like to stand on the margin and kind of look at things sideways. See who's saluting. See what they're thinking. If their eyes are darting about. Stand on the edge of the crowd and listen to the speaker and watch how people are reacting to him. So I don't like authority. I don't even like myself as an authority. I don't trust authority. And I think with very good reason. The difference is I'm not rebelling against nothing. I'm rebelling against something all too real. Now, let's finish this up. We'll play a couple more songs. Then we'll come back, and I swear to God, we will not depart from talking about this new film company. He says, so what we have here is that people from the Nebraska colleges are saying that homeschool children are better academically, and they're more rounded. They're smarter, they're quicker, they're more engaged with the material, they actually listen to things. They don't just attitudinize. They don't just turn off. They don't just say, is this going to be on the test? Is this going to be on the test? You know, because they're actually interested in something and learning. That's the purpose of education. Finally, Nebraska homeschoolers testified that LB 1141 infringes on their freedom to homeschool and claim they will leave Nebraska before they will submit to such overbearing and intrusive regulation. Hell, that's how our country was founded. It was founded by assholes who didn't want to be lectured to. Of course, they didn't want to allow anyone else to teach anything different from what they taught, those Puritans. But nevertheless, the refusal to be coerced into armies, into schools of thought, into anything is part of what made America, and is what is going to make this new revolution. All they are demanding is we are going to teach our kids what we want them taught, whether it pertains to God, queers, or anything. We are going to be the ones deciding what our kids are taught. And that's how all you whites out there should be. Just what the heck is the state trying to put into your kid's head? With a tremendous turnout and Governor Dave Heineman's promise to veto this restrictive bill, we hope LB 1141 will not make it out of the Education Committee. If, however, it does begin to move, we will notify you immediately. Of the crowds in attendance, HSLDA Attorney Mike Donnelly said, "This was incredible work of God. This was an incredible work of God and an amazing testimony to Nebraska homeschoolers. 1,300 people in attendance is an overwhelming number, and the decorum and behavior of all reflected greatly on the homeschool community. It is such a privilege to serve the people of Nebraska, and I pray that the Education Committee can see that there is no need or public demand for this legislation. Homeschoolers do an incredible work, even as they fund the public schools without much complaint through their taxes." That's the point I made earlier, and it's a very valid point. You know, the average public school student has $6,000 to $10,000 spent to inculcate him in attitudes congenial to the Jewish communists who run America. All these people are doing is asking to be able to spend another $1,000 on top of that to educate their kids each year. Unfair, utterly unfair. The true revolution will come when public schooling is destroyed, when the Jews are eliminated from America, when these crazy utopian fantasists of the New World Order are cashiered. That will be the true and abidingly successful revolution. That's how we'll know we won, when there aren't any Jews or NWO crazies running our public schools. Let them go work at McDonald's, cook fries, do something useful for society, not poisoning young kids' minds with these lies. All they want is to be left alone to continue turning out successful graduates. And what those successful graduates are up to, we will cover in the next segment. I've already given you the tease. Now let's hear... we're going to hear four more songs here. First, we're going to hear Temptation by Cinderella Stump. You know I dig that song. Then we're going to hear another one by Amy Spies. And then a couple others, which I won't tell you about. Four songs, and we are... back.
Rosin on the bow, and here we go.
Oh, tell me, will you, darling, why you look so bad tonight? There's bags around your eyeballs, which is red instead of white.
Well, if for this the way you came when I was alone, shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. You smiled a leering neon, my heart is plumb gone, cause you was temptation. It'd be thrilling if and you're willing, but if and it never can be, then pity for me, for you was too bored to be kissed. I couldn't resist, cause you was temptation, and I was yours.
Tempted Adam, as the apple tempted Eve, as there's a mud hole tips of a skeeter, darling.
That's how you tempted me.
And his corn liquor tips a drunkard, as organ tips a bee. As a willow tree tips a caterpillar, darling.
That's how you tempted me. You came when I was alone. Shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. You smiled and leered me on. My heart is plumb gone, 'cause you was temptation. It'd be thrilling if and you're willing, but if and it never can be, then pity for me, 'cause you was too bored to be kissed. I couldn't resist, 'cause you was temptation, and I was yours. Here's my heart, take it away. Yes, take it away. I say that we will never, never, never part. I'm just a slave, just a bad burned slave. I'm a goner with you, 'cause you're temptation, and I'm a red hot flame.
Hot cinder.
All the stars in the sky on this clear mid-May night are beyond the dark clay of these walls. They remind me of you and when our love was new. Everything's better with two. I have rolled out my bed along the stride of red. Zion's great towering views. But the beauty so bold is lost all alone. Everything's there with two. A couple more drinks till they close. Then they'll turn out the lights and ask me to go. So I'll sleep off the haze of my singular ways. Count the days till I'm back home with you. But with three or four, it's hard to keep score. I keep it simple with two. A couple more shrubs till I'm through. Then I'll pack this guitar and head back home to you. And I'll cherish the nights I sleep holding you tight. Everything's there with two. 'Cause everything's there with you. By traveling out west, or if you want to find somebody else, that's better, go ahead. Go ahead. If you want to buy a brand new fancy automobile, or if you want to build a place up in Coldwater Canyon, go ahead. Go ahead, wish you would. Go ahead. If you wanna hold your own hand going up that cliff, or if you wanna just hold back 'cause you ain't ever. up to it, go ahead.
Devil these days, and I'm the devil with
All right, and we're back for our final hour here today on Tuesday, March 4th, 2008. I'm Alex P. Linder, and let's see, it's 3 p.m. here in the Central Standard Time. I have to run at 4, so we're going to do one more hour, and we're going to get in. I don't know if we're going to get in everything I had listed today, but we're at least going to get in this about this new Christian film company. What you just heard was Black Dress. I don't know who does that. J-O-J something. Before that, we heard Go Ahead by Rilo Kiley. We heard Two by Amy Spies. And we heard Temptation by Cinderella Stump. All wonderful short songs, except for Go Ahead by Rilo Kiley. That's a little longer. But if you have peppy, upbeat, 2 to 3.5 minute songs, feel free to send them to me. I have a number of listener songs that I play once in a while. Depending on whether I like them and how long our show goes. But I said this show wouldn't be all that long. We've already gone 2 hours. Hardly strained our breath, I feel. But we'll be back on the air on Thursday, this Thursday. Same time, 1 p.m. Unless something comes up. And if it comes up, we'll either be on tomorrow or Friday. But at least 2 times a week I'll be doing this for about 3 hours. All of the information you hear is going to be interlocking and reinforcing. As I said earlier, the point here is to get you to understand the context of your own life. Gives you some legs back into the past and some roots into the past, and it gives you some feelers out, tendrils out into the future, so that you understand that you are part of a long chain of people. And that gives you something a little more to hold on to than hedonism, consumerism, materialism, and the rest of the garbage philosophy that's left out there for non-whites today, for whites today, because of the Jew. Now let's see where we are sound-wise. I noticed one of those songs is a little off the chart, so I hope we're back to about where we were before. Still not perfect at producing this, but let's go on here. Now, what we have, we've talked about the context of homeschooling. Well, what do these people do? They don't just quit when they get out of their home school, when they graduate, or when they reach the age of college. Well, a lot of them do go off to college, and now they're founding their own colleges. They have one called Patrick Henry. We'll talk more about that in a minute, but because it's involved in this next story. And what this is a new company has been formed called Advent Film Group, AFG, A-D-V-E-N-T, Advent Film Group. And the principal here is George Escobar. It's a good drug-selling Colombian-type name. George Escobar, or simply Spanish. And Advent Film Group has just finished the pickup filming, that's a technical term from the industry jargon, filming their first movie, Come What May, in Purcellville, Virginia, which I believe is the home of Patrick Henry College. And in Patrick Henry College is, in fact, featured in this movie. Escobar's press release says, the movie has garnered wide attention, that is, Come What May. It's going to be the first release from Advent Film Group because it features Patrick Henry College, a national powerhouse in debate and moot court competition. Remember that Patrick Henry College is founded by and for homeschoolers. The movie centers on two PhD students who battle to overturn Roe versus Wade at the National Moot Court Championship. They are coached by Dr. Michael Ferris, the real-life founder and chancellor of PhD, and a high-profile homeschooling advocate. This is the first of 5 movies planned by Advent. So now, think about this. The Christians are developing, essentially, what Pierce advocated in his National Alliance Handbook. They are developing alternative structures, a shadow government, as they call it in Britain. That is, everything that the Jews have that affects, influences, and creates culture, the Christians are developing an alternative to it. Alternative media, Christian radio, alternative music, Christian rock, alternative movies. They're developing their own content and distribution network, since, as we saw with Mel Gibson and The Passion of the Christ, even when there are $1 billion at stake, the Jews will not fund any messages that they perceive to be against their agenda. And since they were the ones who murdered Jesus, as the Jews said at the time, his blood be on us and upon our children, they aren't going to fund anything that depicts them doing just that, calling for Jesus' head. So the Christians are developing the alternative structure that whites are supposed to be developing, and that we have developed in part, although our media are mostly internet-based. We also have our own Byron Jost, who produces feature-length films. One of them I had a brief role in, and helped Byron with to some extent, The Line in the Sand, movie about the Mexican invasion and the forces behind it. You may have seen that. Well, Byron has another one coming out that I've helped him with, and that he's done a wonderful job. I've seen part of it. He's talking to some of the leading lights in America about the true roots of political correctness. So we have our own alternative structure, too. These guys have gone a little farther. They have more people involved and more money involved. And that's what we're going to talk about this hour, or at least a portion of this hour. And this news release all came out, just like the California attack on homeschoolers through the appellate court in Los Angeles. That happened on February 29th. This is February 26th when Escobar puts out his media advisory, his press release. Advent Film Group, a new film company founded by homeschoolers, completed Come What May. It's not in the can yet. That's another industry jargon for when it's completely done and ready to be sent out to the theaters. But the pickup filming, I don't know what that means. I suppose it means it's unedited filming of the film. They got the film, now they got to edit it down and get it in the can. And it features the America's first homeschooling college, Patrick Henry College, which is notable for its debate skills and teams. And this is where a lot of homeschoolers go to school, and it's in Purcellville, Virginia. Now, and the guy who founded the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, Michael Ferris, we just heard from them in response to the Nebraska bill that was successfully opposed by the homeschoolers, apparently, also recently. Ferris, I believe, is the one who created the Homeschoolers Legal Defense Association. He's also the one who created Patrick Henry College. He's also someone who has, I believe, 10 children. So this is a complete model for whites. This guy has a bunch of children. He still manages to create a successful defense association of Christian evangelicals, and he also creates a homeschooling college. And now this college is featured in a film by a new film company made of Christians and homeschoolers. So it's all ginning up. It's all for the good. Read a little more from this short release. With a cast crew of 40 homeschooled students led by film professionals, Advent Film Group's AFG's movies are similar to Facing the Giants in scale, budget, and aspirations. That is, there are various levels of movies, and we'll get into this a little bit in a minute, but you know, where the average feature film might cost like $65 million to produce, then there are films that cost maybe $3 to $10 million, then there are films that cost $1 to $3 million. There are all these different levels. So he's saying theirs, I guess, is on about the lowest level, like $1 to $3 million. Similar to Facing the Giants, which I haven't seen. I don't know what that is, but AFG's national network of supporters, now several hundred homeschooling families strong and growing, will help promote this film's release in the late spring of 2008. So, this spring they're making their first release. They have plans for like 5 movies over 3 years, and they're going to distribute it through a private network of homeschoolers and Christian conservatives. Just the way Mel Gibson and his Icon Productions did it, because they were locked out of Hollywood by the Jews, who are not interested, as the leftist media critics say, in turning a profit as much as they are interested in pursuing a political agenda. Have I said that a million times? Then I'll say it a million more. The media are driven by a political agenda first, and profits only second. That's why they suppress anything that would truly appeal to whites. G-rated movies produce more money than PG or X-rated movies or R-rated movies, but the Jews prefer to produce garbage like The Crying Game, because it pushes their political agenda, even as they suppress movies that would make them more money, like The Passion of the Christ. Because it doesn't help their agenda, it hurts it. And you'll notice how the agenda of the Jewish movie producers is precisely the same as the political agenda of the California legislature and of the Congress. Both sides are pushing homosexuality. They're anti-Christian. They're anti-white. They're pro-Israel. They're pro-Jew. They promote multiculturalism and diversity, which Jews are believe are good for Jews in America, just as they believe racial exclusion is good for Jews in Israel. Anti-white, anti-Christian agenda is what all these negative forces have in common. He says, so they've got 40 homeschooled students are the cast and crew that produced this movie that's coming out in 2008 called Come What May. And it's about Patrick Henry students trying to overthrow Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade, which was celebrated by the Jewish media powerhouses, was, regardless of what you believe about abortion, it was an unconstitutional decision because it took the power away from the states that was properly theirs. That is, abortion was properly a state decision. But the Jews didn't like the state having that power, the specific states having that power. They wanted that power made by one central government, just as in Brown versus Board of Education. They don't trust whites to run their own lives. They want to treat whites as a human resource to be taxed and have their lives expended abroad fighting for Israel and for the Jews. And the Israelis are funded to the tune of $5,000 a family out of the pockets of white Americans every year. $5,000 going from you to Israel to subsidize the Jews who hate Christians and literally spit on them and who are utterly racist and don't let non-Jews come into Israel at all. Build walls to stop it. Don't let Jews marry non-Jews. But in America, they encourage the reverse. They encourage states to get rid of laws forbidding miscegenation. And I believe the last of those was got rid of, overturned in the 60s. And they encourage the murder of white babies in the womb by nationalizing these decisions through perverted court readings of settled law. They do the same thing with education. Separate but equal had been, separate education had been on the books for over 50 years when it was reversed on a whim out of thin air for no substantial reason by a Jew-controlled court in the 50s. And that's how Roe versus Wade was done also. A twisted, distorted reading of the plain meaning of words in the Constitution was used to collectivize, centralize, and nationalize a decision that theretofore had been left to the states. It was properly within their concern to regulate it, as the Constitution said nothing about it. Now we have the rise of homeschooling, of alternative structures, and the graduates of these are working to restore the types of laws that have been destroyed by the Jews, perverted or overturned by the evil Zog, Zionist-occupied government. And the Jews completely dominate the law schools. I've told you many times, do research on it. Look up the top 10 law schools. Go out and find their websites. And look up their faculty. And write down the ones who you think are Jews. And compare the percentage of those faculty that are Jews to the total faculty. And you'll find in the top law schools about 50% are identifiably Jewish. Very close. Never less than about a third are identifiably Jewish. And that is a very conservative read on it. These are the law schools that turn out the lawyers and the ways of thinking that dominate America. And here we have a counter reaction to that communist Jewish takeover. Not only of law schools in the 60s, but of all of the academy and the country as a whole. And I could sign off law after law after law that was passed in the 60s. I mean, they instituted harsher federal gun control in the 60s. They flipped over the immigration law in the 60s. They normalized the pill. They normalized abortion. they normalized, all in the period of about 1960 to 1960 to 1965 to 1972, right in that period. You pretty much fight all these laws, 64 say to 72. All the civil rights, all the sex law changes, all the gun controls, all the immigration reversals, all this happened in this communist takeover during that period. Today, 30, 40 years after the fact, we are seeing the most profound effects, and we're finally seeing a counter-revolution stirring. Most prominently, not through whites like me, but through the Christians, because they have a bigger settled base of people, they have longer institutional forms, and they are finally fighting back. First by withdrawing, then by building their own alternative structures, as Pierce advised in the NA handbook. Now, why are they doing this? Well, what does Escobar, who founded AVG, say? Advent Film Groups. We're doing this because film schools aren't working sufficiently for Christian filmmakers, Escobar claims. The status quo is clearly broken. That is, Jewish-controlled Hollywood is clearly broken. Otherwise, big-budget, faith-based, or Christian-authored movies like Amazing Grace or Narnia would be directed by Christian directors, which is not the case, unless you finance a film yourself, as Mel Gibson had to do for Passion of the Christ. So he's saying that Jewish Hollywood, he's not using the terms, but what he's saying is the Jews in Hollywood are preventing pro-Christian movies from being made. And to the extent they allow anything that might have a coded Christian theme in it to come through, they won't give Christians the job of directing these movies. They'll turn it over to secular humanists. Those are always the bete noire of these Christians. He says, homeschooled students and their parents, interested in rebuilding culture for Christ in cinema, have sought out AFG as an alternative to film school. This fulfills part of AFG's mission, says ex-Discovery executive and AFI producing fellow George Escobar, a homeschooling dad. We are training students who will one day direct big-budget films with moral integrity and fidelity to a biblical worldview. So now this guy, we'll go into this, let's see if I got that. We'll go into it a little bit, but the guy who set up Advent Film Groups has a background at AOL and Discovery Channel. So he has professional roots in this, but he also is unwilling to forsake his own worldview to make money, unlike most politicians and people who are whores or prostitutes and sellouts. He says, unlike film schools where students pay large tuitions to make short or student films, AFG productions are feature-length from the start, giving the completed film immediate market value. AFG actually pays college students a small stipend even as they are trained, earn professional credits, and receive profit participation points. So this is serious stuff. AFG is filming feature-length films, and it's distributing them through its own network. A little bit about that. AFG is also building a movie distribution network from within the homeschooling pro-life, pro-family communities. Rather than sharing film revenues strictly with traditional distributors, and that's a network dominated by Jews, that's why they were able to shut Mel Gibson out. Jews own the companies that show movies. They own the distribution network and they own the theaters in which movies are shown. They took over. Although whites created the technology, white Aryans like Thomas Edison created the technology, Jews were quick to realize that they could capitalize on it and make a lot of money off of it. From the very first Nickelodeons, where you stick a little piece of money in and it shows you, you know, a simple film in the old days, are in an arcade. Jews were quick to take this technology over and set up national distribution. And they realized that this had far more than commercial application. It had real political benefits to it. Finally, 100 years after the fact, after all this technology was first developed, whites are developing alternative structures, even if they see themselves more as Christians. These are still all white Christians who are doing this, or almost exclusively white Christians doing this. So understand that. He says, AFG is also building a movie distribution system from within the homeschooling, pro-life, pro-family communities. Rather than sharing film revenue strictly with traditional distributors, AFG seeks to channel movie revenue into Christian and family-based organizations. So they're keeping their money out of the pockets of the Jew. They're not going to a Jew theater, turning over their money to a Jew to see a Jew-written, Jew-edited, Jew-produced, Jew-directed, Jew feature film, in which all the money that they supply goes over to the Jew. What they're doing is setting up their own non-Jew channels for this. They're going to produce the kind of movies that make money and that Christians want to see, that won't shame or embarrass people for being white or Christian. Escobar remarks, homeschoolers have already successfully turned the public education monopoly upside down. We saw that earlier today with the largest gathering ever at a Nebraska Senate hearing. 1,300, most people ever who came to hear about a bill. That's political power, and that's commercial and financial power too. The flip side of it. We will now do the same in cinema production and distribution. Let me read that sentence one more time, uninterrupted. Homeschoolers have already successfully turned the public education monopoly upside down. We will now do the same in cinema production and distribution. What this guy has correctly realized is that there is a gigantic market out there going completely unserved. What you get from Jew-controlled Hollywood is agitprop movies, or movies that are aimed at 12-year-old niggers. What this new Christian company, Christian movie production and distribution company, is going to do is produce good movies that are wholesome. It's a very charged word.
What does wholesome mean? What do you mean unwholesome? How can the Crying Game be considered unwholesome?
Everybody knows what wholesome means, all right? We know what it means. We have a natural sense of that. These Christians are going to produce pro-Christian, wholesome movies that are going to find a large and growing audience, and it's going to happen entirely outside the Jewish distribution mechanism. It's a beautiful thing. Now, let's get a few more details on this guy's background and Patrick Henry College, so you see how it all fits together and how a whole revolutionary, really un- and anti-Americuan structure is growing because the Jewish slave system is so miserable. Now, this was announced on the Christian Newswire. Ex-Discovery, an AOL executive, announces creation of new Christian film group. September 6th. I'm assuming this is... there's no date on it. I'm assuming this is last year. Intending to groom a new generation of Christian filmmakers, high-tech video innovator George Escobar has launched Advent Film Group, LLC, to train students who will one day direct big-budget films with moral integrity. Expecting this new film production and distribution corporation to carve inroads into Hollywood, Escobar announced the completion of principal photography on AFG's first film, Moot Courting, working title, at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia. Our mission is to change culture for Christ through media, Escobar said, noting how homeschoolers will play a key role. We are drawing from the outstanding talent and strength of the homeschooling community, he said. If homeschoolers can turn the public education monopoly upside down, they can do the same for cinema. High-profile homeschooling advocates Dr. Michael Ferris, founder and chancellor of PHC, Patrick Henry College, the nation's only Christian liberal arts college established to serve homeschooled students, PHC President Dr. Graham Walker, and Michael Smith, who's the current president of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, have endorsed and enthusiastically support Advent. Escobar says Advent is a response to an increasingly unprincipled film industry, read Jewish, making fuzzy faith-based movies, as well as to distressing lack of qualified Christian filmmakers needed to fill key positions as directors of big-budget movies. So he's not only going outside the Jewish system, he's producing crops of technically able, skilled professionals who can invade the Jewish system and fill its ranks with people who exhibit fidelity to a biblical worldview. As a Christian community, we have not done our job to raise up superbly qualified born-again film directors, Escobar observes. A born-again believer and homeschooling dad, Escobar is a former American Film Institute producing fellow and recent VP of product development for Discovery and executive director for AOL Video. Citing the success of Facing the Giants, a film made for $100,000 that earned $10 million in box office sales and sold over 1 million DVDs, Escobar says new digital technologies give independent filmmakers a foothold in an industry ruled by multi-million dollar budgets. The timing is right, he believes, for skilled Christian filmmakers to impact the market. Our budgets are right-sized to our self-distribution campaign and network, explains Escobar. It's sustainable. So it's not a one-off. What they have is a format for producing monies, or for producing quality films at a reasonable cost with a reasonable belief that they will get enough return to enable the production of more movies. And that's what we're working on with Byron Jost and his movies. So we can do our own thing just as the Christians are. AFG's three-year plan includes producing five films touching on themes of the biblical worldview important to family audiences, which is obviously a proven giant market because there's so little out there you could take a child to see that wouldn't embarrass you. I remember seeing E.T. When did that come out? Probably, you know, back in the early 80s, and the people were eating at the, you know, they're eating dinner, family eating dinner, and one of the kids, you know, they get into it, and one of the kids says something like penis breath to the other kid. And Jew Spielberg has the family, the parents exhibit no reaction to that. That's just normal. Now, was it normal in your family if you said something like that? How would your parents have reacted? Would they have tolerated that kind of stuff? No. How do you think the Jew normalizes diversity, perversion, niggers, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? He does it by depicting just that kind of a scene. He shows outrageous things happening without outrageous responses. That's how you normalize decadence, perversion, and negrosity, so to speak. Normalize nigger standards of behavior, normalize Jew standards of behavior by depicting it as normal and suppressing all counterviews. What else do we look at here? Let's look at a little bit at... So we'll watch for that. We'll continue to track this as we continue to track the ongoing homeschooling revolution and the fight between the state and the state governments, the federal government, the state governments, and the homeschoolers. We'll continue to track that. And we will also continue to track the development of Action Film Groups, or Advent Film Group, as its first release comes out, and we'll see how it works. There's a little more on that, though, that I found, and I still haven't gone thoroughly through this myself, so we'll read through it a little bit together. And let me see where this is. Okay. Darn it, did I not find it? So maybe I dropped it there. Darn it, I had that. I'll dig it up here. This is Advent Film Group's site. There it is. And we'll just see what it looks like. It's at adventfilmgroup.com, as you might suspect. Findable easily through Google. What do we have? They have a trailer there. They have the story. They have sneak peeks. They say, come what may, and they show, you know, a student in court. Serious, good-looking Christian type, well-dressed. Come what may, that's their movie coming out this spring. The stakes are high. The judges are stacked. And Caleb must make a decision. Who's starring in this film? Austin Carney, Victoria Emmons, Kenny Jezik, Karen Jezik, Josh Holcomb, David Halbrook, Mike Ferris. Good WASP names, huh? He says, learn about on this website, learn about the number one question people ask us. Click here. How come movies like Come What May will be distributed? How will they be distributed is the leading question people want to know. And they have it, they explain how the movie system works. So listen to this. It's kind of interesting. And this is what, I'm not sure who this is coming from, whether Escobar or one of his droogs. He says, most people assume that movie distribution automatically begins with theatrical release. For movies made by studios, that is definitely true. It is mandatory for studio movies to have a theatrical run in order for them to succeed. For everyone else, it's an option. So he said in February of this year, 2008, distribution, the question everyone asks, everywhere I go, every time I meet someone new who wants to learn about AFG or Come What May, their film, first film, every conversation begins with the same question. What about distribution? It's a great question. And one that I had to answer for myself way back at the very beginning of AFG. In fact, no one should launch a film production company or make a movie without knowing the precise answer to that question. And then he cites what I read above, that studios have to release, but for everyone else it's an option. How can that be? Doesn't every movie have to be shown at the local movie theater in order for it to be profitable? The simple answer is no. A theatrical release is actually a loss leader for virtually every movie, except the bona fide boffo box office franchise movies like Pirates, Shrek, Star Wars, and the like. The studios actually know ahead of time that they will lose money at the theaters, hence the loss leader moniker. If that's the case, why release it to the theaters at all? Three reasons. Raise awareness, get reviews, increase credibility for ancillary sales, like sales to Europe or Asia or something. Advent Film Group seeks to achieve these same goals, but we have to do it in a different way. We'll get to that in a moment, but first some background information on cost and profitability, and this is interesting information about the movie industry and its budgets and the different niches that productions fall into. Studio movies are mass market entertainment projects. They have to appeal to a huge audience. So they're, in other words, they're not niche publications at all. They are mass market productions. They have to appeal to a huge audience to get an ROI, or return on their investment. The ROI is based on the cost of production and its resulting distribution revenue. Here's a quick breakdown of production cost averages. These will be some interesting facts for you listening at home who might be thinking about forming your own movie production companies. The average major studio film in 2006, latest for which they have figures apparently when he wrote this earlier, or within 2-3 weeks of today, cost $65 million to make. So the average major studio film cost $65 million to make in 2006, and another $35 million to market and distribute. So you're talking $100 million for mass market films 2 years ago, $100 million to make and to market slash distribute. Two-thirds for making it, another third for marketing and distribution. $100 million total, 2006. Then he says, but lots of movies are made in the $15 to $30 million range, so for less than a third of the cost for the mass market ones. These are made by mini majors like Lionsgate or the Weinstein Company. 310 to Yuma is a recent example of a film that would be in the $15 to $30 million as opposed to the $100 million range. Still more are made for $3 to $10 million as low-budget indies. So right there you've got three levels, the up to $10 million, the up to $30 million, and the $100 million average. 130-10, look at it that way. 3 to 10, 15 to 30, and, 100. Lower still are movies made for 1 to 3 million. The upcoming Jack and the Beanstalk movie from the Avalon Family Films is in this category. Micro-budget movies are those made for $100,000 to $500,000. Facing the Giants is the best example of a successful micro-budget movie. So, micro means under seven figures, or actually under a million, I guess. Then you've got 1 to 3, then you've got 3 to 10, then you've got 15 to 30, and then you've got 100 million for the blockbusters. Now that we know the production cost averages, let's look at how the basic theatrical distribution model affects profitability. Let's say we have a $5 million movie and it's made $10 million at the box office in ticket sales. Great, you think, it made its money back, plus $5 million in profit. The filmmaker should be doing cartwheels. Not so fast. The movie actually lost money. Here's how. Profitability breakdown: $10 million gross sales revenue minus $5 million exhibitor fees. Theater owners get 50% of ticket sales. So if the Jew owns a chain of theaters, he gets 50% of the cost of every movie he shows. That leaves a $5 million net revenue balance. So it costs $5 million to make, so not a bad deal, right? Hold on just a minute. We haven't factored in the distribution cost. Now, the distributor deducts their fees and expenses against the $5 million. $3 million in prints and advertising cost. Just the material cost for the $35 million prints and ads. So right there, you have a film that cost $5 million to make and raised $10 million. Well, $5 million of that was taken by the people showing the film, and then another $3 million was taken by the distributors. Again, Jewish, Jewish, Jewish. Theater owners, Jewish. Distributors, Jewish. They take $8 million out of that grossing of $10 million at a cost of $5 million to make. So it's already cost $8 million. $8 million of that, you've got... It's already cost more than it's produced at that point. So it costs $5 million to make, and then you've got another $8 million to the distribution and the theater owners. He says 3.5 distribution fee, so it's not just the print and advertising. He says a theater owner gets 35 to 40% distribution fee from the gross sales. $6.5 million in total distribution expenses weighed against the $5 million net revenue balance. That equals a $1.5 million loss. So what it adds up to is make the movie for $5 million. It grosses $10 million. Half of that goes immediately back to the theater owner, and then another $6.5 million goes back to the theater owner and the distributor for print advertising and just a simple fee. So even though the movie has made $10 million, it's cost $11.5 million. The filmmaker or production company who spent $5 million in production costs still hasn't seen a nickel of profit from them. In fact, they haven't even covered their original $5 million in production costs, being a 1.5 in the hole. So in actuality, the movie actually lost at least $6.5 million during its theatrical run. $1.5 million loss in distribution plus $5 million loss in production. So actually, yeah, that's right. I may have messed that up earlier. So what it is that the movie costs $5 million to make. It brings in $10 million, but it loses $5 million for the right to for the theater owners, and it loses $6 million to the distributor, $6.5 million. So it's a $1.5 million in the hole, plus it's garnered $11.5 million in cost for the tenants raised, plus the $5 million it cost to make it, so it's $6.5 million in the hole. Actually, so the movie actually lost at least $6.5 million during its theatrical run. $1.5 million loss in distribution, cost $11.5 million, plus $5 million loss in production. Now you know why it's a loss leader. So how do people actually make money? You guessed it, in DVD sales mostly. The standard model is that DVD sales will generate about 1.3x of the theatrical distribution sales. So DVD sales for our movie should be about $13 million. Let's continue the profitability breakdown. So $13 million in DVD sales from 650,000 units sold at $20 retail minus $6.5 million in wholesale distribution costs and fees equals $6.5 million in net profit. That's a little better, he says. So $13 million minus the $6.5 they were down for making it, plus the $5 million plus the $1.5 in the distribution that was unmade up for by the theater showing from six, leaves a few million in profit. So you can see if you have something good, you can make money with it, but there's a lot involved in it. And this website, you can check it out. I haven't loaded this onto VNN Forum yet, but you can see from the website that it's still got... It's still developing. It's professional and slick, but there are a couple of typos, and a lot of it is still under construction. But as he said, they have already done their first movie. It's not in the can, but they have the pickups, or whatever they call it, of the movie. They've already shot it. And it involves, from content through production, it's Christians making Christian movies. So this is a good thing. And it's something quite impressive. And you know what? Let me see here. I've been nailed twice on this this Max Carson thing. There are definitely some points I want to make in relation to him, but I simply have got to get out the door here today. We've gone 2 hours and 40 minutes. I'm going to round it up by playing another 20 minutes of music. That'll take us up to the top of the hour, then I'll cut it off. What we covered today was homeschooling in California and in Nebraska and in Virginia. So nationwide, you've got homeschoolers in California are fighting a hostile state government that's trying to force their kids into classrooms where they'll be taught about the virtues of homosexuality. In Nebraska, you've got 1,300 homeschoolers rising up to prevent the NEA from banning homeschooling through one of its many artifices. And on the other side of the country, in the east, you've got homeschoolers in Virginia going to college, Patrick Henry College, graduating from there, founding their own film school and movie production company, and using these existing networks created by these homeschoolers to distribute movies with pro-white, pro-Christian content. Fascinating stuff. Very telling, something that white revolutionaries will want to pay attention to, because all these people involved in this are typically conservative, evangelical Christians who are white, 99.9% of them, and they come from and have themselves very large families. And they are withdrawing from the system, rejecting its structures, rejecting its media, and building their own, and succeeding at it. What a great lesson for us white revolutionaries. And let's leave that where it is today. I'll be loading more information about AVG and its films onto VNNforum.com, where I encourage you listening, if you haven't joined, join VNNforum.com. We have an edited, managed forum that it also allows free speech. And we have sticky threads, permanent archives, that is, of all the things we discuss here in Radio Estina. So that if you're a writer or a researcher or merely someone who wants to get up to speed, you have a one-stop shop for doing just that. And it's not just about homeschooling, it's about everything that pertains to your white world and the way it's being messed up by the Jews who run America and our media and most of the West. We have country histories and we have subject histories. You can find it all, as I said, at VNNforum.com. And when we come back on Thursday, I will discuss, and it will be the first topic on the agenda, because I talked about it very briefly the other day on Friday, but I didn't really get into it. I've learned a little more subsequently about this fellow Max Carson, who is being persecuted. He's a satirist at the University of Colorado. He writes some good stuff that someone made an excellent point. It would not sit uncomfortably beside early P.J. O'Rourke material. It's kind of in that vein. And he made an interesting point. I'll just throw this out as a teaser about, you know, he's a young man and trying to attract women. He says women really don't like it when you treat them seriously. And I think that that insight that he has, he says they'd rather be objectified. They'd rather be treated as sexual objects. It's easier for them. And that is true of very many women, and American women in particular. The first serious women I ever knew were in Germany, where you could actually talk to one and you didn't have to constantly be teasing and acting like an idiot or trying to amuse or entertain them, which is the default position of most American girls or women. You know, entertain me, amuse me, buy me things. That is the attitude that comes directly from Sex and the City and these other ridiculous shows. Now, his observation also, the reason that it occurred to me today, and I was going to dovetail it into the homeschooling, was the remark by the professor from the University of Nebraska that these homeschooling students, not being taught to the test as the public schoolers are, they're actually listen to stuff and they're engaged in it and they're fundamentally serious people. So what Max Carson, the satirist, is seeing in women, University of Nebraska professors are seeing in their students. And Clyde Wilson at the Paleocon site, another topic we didn't get around today, is also seeing from his students. They're very shallow, superficial. Just tell me what to think and I'll think it. Don't make me think. Thinking is painful. I want light reading or no reading. Oh, what I actually want is TV. That's the attitude. All opinions are equal. But you have to hold the right ones. And your opinion's no better than mine. But you better hold the right opinion or you're wrong. They believe all these contradictory things because they don't believe anything, because they don't think, because they don't want to think, because that's how they've been raised up and schooled in public slave indoctrination camps. Don't you love your kids enough to keep them out of that kind of garbage? Don't you care enough to find out what goes into their heads? Isn't that more important even than what goes into their bodies? If you're a father, it should be. And now I got to get out the door, but I'm going to play another 15 minutes of music here, and we will pick up with Max Carson, and we'll pick up with the Paleocons. I keep threatening to do that, but haven't done it. We'll pick that up on Thursday. And of course, I'm assuming no more pressing immediate material intervenes, but I feel good that we've given a good coverage to homeschooling today and that you all really understand what's actually going on in this country. And how people are fighting back in their various ways, and how that pertains to our white movement and what we can do to build our own structures outside the system. So until Thursday, thanks for being with me. I'm Alex Linder. This is Radio Istina, Tuesday, March 4th, 2008. We're going to play... What are we going to play? We're going to play a song by Prince. We're going to play a song by Matthew Sweet. And we're going to play two more selected ones after that, and that will wrap it up. It'll be about 3 hours exactly. So, once again, thanks for listening. I'm Alex Linder, and good night.